I'm coming from the temple of void, crown for my hat, man for my boy. Onward ride as a talk of raw, converse with Horus, create with tar. I ride to Jeb, to roar with bass, I talk to Moo as I ride the raft. Roof of the world I sit, cross-legged, right over left. Drums of dance to drums of war, who knows the score, speak no more. Who watches down with the eyes of black, to the east Blackwood.
Sissy!
Okay, you know, I know y'all not gonna believe this, but I don't have no reason to lie to y'all. Because I've had a few Bro Diallo listeners who tell me that I don't do enough with the phones, that I need to open up the phones more. So when I got here in the studio this morning and I was setting up, I made a note that I was going to hook up the phones. Because I don't like people playing on my phone. But the phone thing isn't coming up. The phone app that we use here in the studio. So I'm not sure if the phone's going to work. You can try to call me at 312-985-7834. And if the little green phone thing pops up, but I can't get it to come up. Normally I could get it to... Oh, is this it? Did they switch the phone service? What not? Nope. That's face. Anyway... You can try to call the Bro Diallo show at 312-985-7834. I will be more mindful of the phones. I'm not sure what's up with the phones just now. But I don't know if you can call. But if you can't call today, you can't blame me, because I'm going to be more mindful about opening up the phone, getting more of y'all feedback, and getting y'all to call in more and all of that. But that might have to wait till Wednesday's show, because today's show, the phone thing, the Skype, is not responding. So anyway, try to call if you desire to call. If you can't get in, don't be discouraged. It's not your fault. It's my fault. But anyway, we'll proceed and call down the Lord's blessings on this phone situation and see what that does. It won't do anything, but I like to mock people's religious delusions whenever I get an opportunity. Okay, now let's get on with the show. Now, let me do this again. Clear my throat. You're tuned in to the Bro Diallo Show, live and direct on Q4 Radio. You can listen live at AM 60 if you're in the city of Chirac, stay within our limited, but we proud of our little FAM broadcast. Low power, AM, independent, non-corporate, anti-fascist. We ain't trying to sell you nothing. And we ain't trying to extract nothing from you. We are trying to build community of mutual support based on justice, art, beauty, community, and again, anti-racism, anti-fascism, anti-everything that ain't pro-life and pro-support. Oh, you can't say pro-life anymore. I was just arguing with some Muslims. They mad that the... gay people have stolen the rainbow. I'm not sure what these Muslim brothers wanted to do with the rainbow. I asked them, when you get the rainbow back from the gay people, what you intend to do with the rainbow? They didn't really have any plans for it. They just knew they didn't want the gays to have it. So then I asked them, maybe perhaps if they would offer the gays something in exchange as a trade for the rainbow, so they can get the rainbow back for the heterosexuals, not just Muslims. The Muslims are fighting to get the rainbow back for all heterosexuals. And I'm like, perhaps if you gave them something in exchange. And I suggested that they give the gays the crescent moon with the star, because I mean, that's fabulous. You know, can you imagine what the gays could do with the crescent moon and the star and all those? I mean, there's a lot of really, you know, fabulous Islamic symbols that they could put up for trade, but then they weren't willing to give anything up in exchange for it. So anyway, I'm still trying to, I made myself the unofficial negotiator, but I am a non-biased negotiator because I am not a member of the LGBT community, and nor am I a Muslim. So I think I can come in like the United States does with Israel and Palestine and be a fair broker, and I'll give y'all updates. I don't know. Sometimes I have no time for this kind of mess, but I make time for it. I'm sorry. But anyway, I shouldn't have went off on that. Anyway, I got three Muslims mad at me somewhere in the world. But I want to say more about black Muslims, and because I was told that I should respect Islam, and I asked for any reason in the world. And I think I do respect Islam. And I don't even know if I did. Did I tell y'all can listen on AM 1680 Q4 radio on AM 1680, or you can listen live on the website, Q4.org, TuneIn app, iTunes Radio. Also, you used to be able to listen on the Facebook. I'm going to have to, because I'm telling y'all to do stuff I don't do. Because normally I listen to Q4 Radio. I don't have the TuneIn app or iTunes Radio. I listen at Q4.org. I just go to the website. I pull up the website in my car. I pull up the website at home. That's how I listen to Q4. You know, so I've never listened on it. So I'm taking, you know, John's word for it that it's on the iTunes. I mean, he says that it's there. I haven't heard anybody call me a liar on that. So I might have to go. And I remember you used to be able to listen to Q4 Radio and the Bro Diallo Show live on the Facebook page, where you go to the Facebook page and it broadcasts live on it. I don't know if that's the case anymore. They're constantly flipping and changing up what you can and can't do on the Facebook app. So anyway, today is June 17th in the year of your Lord, 2019. My son's going on his first overseas trip in a few days, and I'm trying to manage that too while I'm brokering the return of the rainbow from the gays to the Muslims and trying to get some fair exchange for that. I'm also trying to manage my wife. This will be the first time her precious son is going overseas, and she's trying to be strong. You know, I am completely indifferent, of course, being the hard alpha male that I am, the Umarian tribesman that I am, that I don't, you know, I'm too hard for emotions. But, you know, he's going to be gone for a few weeks. But, you know, it's for his own growth and edification as he goes into his senior year. We want him to have a little bit of taste of life experience. So those days are coming. I don't even like looking at the calendar because it's counting down. But, you know, anyway, until then, he's home. We got him. Where are we? Oh, let me tell you something else. Today's show is titled, I changed it. I was going to call it The Fallacy of White Privilege. That's what I wanted to call it. Because if I call it The Fallacy of White Privilege, I think that that's a more intellectual title for today's show. And I'm not going to talk long on it because I didn't told y'all about this. I didn't told y'all about it. If you're not listening, I'm going to be done. But I realized that Friday's show was the Black Fatherhood Fallacies. And I didn't want to beat the word fallacy to death. There's only so many multisyllable words I know. So I can't beat my multisyllable words to death. So I have to, you know, change it up. Can't overuse that word, even though it's such an actual, it's such an effective and useful word, fallacies. Because we live in a world saturated on fallacy, that is governed by fallacies. If American society, Western society, capitalism could not exist without fallacies. So that word is always at the forefront of my medulla oblongata. It's always forefront at my conscious and subconscious mind, but I can't beat the word to death. So like I said, I don't want to overuse my multisyllable words. I want to save them, put them in the pocket for later. So then I said, well, okay. So is the phone coming up now? I see, maybe. Anyway, so I changed it to white privilege is a myth. And that's controversy. I didn't want to say that white privilege was a myth. Even though white privilege is a myth, I didn't want to title today's show White Privilege is a Myth. Because I go out on Q4 Radio, I go out on YouTube, I go out on Facebook, and I know I'm going to get a lot of, whole lot of bunch of white folks and black conservative Uncle Tom boot licking, buck dancing, sellout, race traitors on here like, yeah, thinking they agree with me. That always happens. I hate it. I always find myself where I get these scumbags, these idiots, these fallacious people who try to huddle up with me and think they hold common cause with me because of some of my positions. One of the things I get that with all the time is when I critique feminism. Whenever I critique feminism, whenever I say something like feminism, I get all these sexists that want to come give me a pound, that want to thump chests with me. homies over hoes. And then I have to be like, whoa, slow your roll, homie. I don't agree with feminism, but my critique of feminism is not the same as yours. My conclusions about feminism are not the same as yours. And then not only do I have to fight with the self-identified feminists, I have to fight with the sexists, and I don't have nobody to huddle up with. I have no one. I got people flinging feces at me from both sides of a fight. But that's where you find, when you become a rationalist, when you become based in evidence and research, you know, that you'll find yourself, you can't huddle up with the people you are against. You can't huddle up against the people you're against on the side of the people you with. It's very uncomfortable. So you might as well get used to being uncomfortable, discomfort. Get very used to it. Become intimate with discomfort. Another thing is with the gay rights movement. I talk about the gay rights movement. I criticize, I condemn, I reject the gay rights movement. There's nothing special. I do that because it's an integrationist movement, just like feminism. It's like the civil rights movement. I'm not an integrationist. And the only reason I'm not an integrationist is not because I just hate the white man so much I don't want to be nowhere near him. I hate the integrationist movement because the integrationist movement are destined to fail. They're self-sabotaging. Okay, it looks like the phone is up. So when I critique the gay rights movement, because the one question I always ask about the gay rights movement, and this is related to white privilege, because you got to understand these certain things if you're going to understand those other things. So when I critique, I say the gay rights folks come to me and they like, yo, we're fighting for freedom. We're fighting for justice. We are historically oppressed. We are historically discriminated people. The system goes against us. Oh, whoa. And I'm like, yeah, hey, gay dudes, I can't, lesbian, trans people, intersex, asexual. You're right about all of that. But just because you are oppressed, discriminated, historically excluded population, doesn't mean that your fight for inclusion is a just one. I'm like, they got gay day at Disneyland. I go on to Google and they change the Google logo to rainbows. You go to Apple. Apple changes logo to rainbows. Hell, when I logged onto my Xbox to play Mortal Kombat, they didn't change the Xbox logo to a rainbow. Now tell me one justice movement, one freedom fighter movement, they don't change it to red, black, and green. Can you imagine them having a Black Panther Day? Can you even imagine? Forget Black Panther. Okay, that's maybe too much for Disney. Can you imagine them having an International Workers of the World Day at Disney? So if your movement was truly about social justice, I don't think the multinational corporations would be so friendly to you. So obviously what you're asking for, what you're advocating for in the gay rights movement, is not in any way a threat to the status quo. In fact, it reinforces, legitimizes, and advances the status quo. And you can't be pro-justice and pro-status quo if the status quo is unjust. But then, so when I go to level my critiques, then all the homophobes want to dogpile on me. They want to suppress me. They want to hold me down and have their way with me. I don't know. But to me, it's like homophobia. When you get to the outer edges of homophobia, you know, and I'm only thinking about this because I am a former homophobe. And I told the homophobes, I'm willing, because, you know, ain't nobody more heterosexual than me. I was Dr. Umaring before Umar, when Umar was a pudgy little undergrad somewhere, you know. I was Umaring before Umar. So I understand them. I fully understand it. Ain't nobody more heterosexual than me. But I just said, you know, my homophobia was based in my religious upbringing. I believe that God made Adam and Eve and didn't make Adam and Steve. And even when I'm like, well, I'm out of the church, they indoctrinate you. I've been taught that stuff since I was in the womb. I was baptized at 12 years old. Before I knew anything, I didn't know nothing. I knew that. So anyway, I said, listen, give me a rationalist foundation for being anti-gay. And that's all my stuff. Even because one time I was anti-abortion. And they told me abortion was genocide. And I knew a Margaret Sanger was a eugenicist, and she was a racist, and Margaret Sanger. But one thing you know, one thing you recognize, let me just say this, and I know this is a rabbit hole. But Margaret Sanger, if you truly study Margaret Sanger, not just listen to, you know, sexist rhetoric or black nationalist rhetoric about Margaret Sanger, Margaret Sanger was very clear. Margaret Sanger wanted for affluent white women the legal access, the legal voluntary access to abortion and birth control and education about their body. What she advocated for the blacks and the poor and the genetically unfit was forced sterilization, not abortion, not birth control, forced sterilization. So if you really look at it, she was a racist and a woman's rights advocate, which is one of my critiques of feminism. You can be for women's rights and for racism and for capitalism and for ecocide. There is nothing inherently revolutionary about integrating women into the Western economy or Western institutions of power. There's nothing inherently good about that. And women keep proving again, because one thing the feminists always say, anything that you can do, I can do better. And women have proven it. Go to my air. I always go to these examples of women in power and women in leadership, and they're just as genocidal, just as corrupt. Bibi Netanyahu wife just, you know, stealing, just admitted she was robbing her own country blind. So, yeah, anything we can do, they can do better. That's not even anything we can dispute anymore. But that also goes for the good stuff and the bad stuff. So just saying, hey, lady, you're a woman. I hear you roar. But anyway, that's Margaret Sanger. So what actually is available for black women in terms of from Planned Parenthood, the services provided by Planned Parenthood, education, birth control, family planning, and leading up to and through abortion are things Margaret Sanger never wanted Planned Parenthood to offer the genetically unfit, the blacks and the natives, and the mentally weak and infirm, or the poor masses. She felt that those services should only be made available for women of high breeding. So Margaret Sanger would not be happy with Planned Parenthood. She would not be happy with the organization. So even though y'all are like, Margaret Sanger, Planned Parenthood, you don't really know what Margaret Sanger, she wrote down. She wrote down what she thought, and she wrote down what she advocated. But more people are like, and it's horrible. You ain't got to lie, Craig. You can just tell the truth about what Margaret Sanger said. But if you tell the absolute truth about Margaret Sanger said, you can't also say you want to limit black women's reproductive rights or end black women's access to voluntary abortions and still saying you're trying to protect them from Margaret Sanger's genocide campaign, because those aren't the same thing. So the facts get in the way. That's just something on the side. Let's get back to the fallacy, because that is indirectly related to, I have here in my notes, the fallacy of white privilege, but to the mythology of white privilege. Oh, that's another multi-syllable word. Let me just put that in the vocabulary list, so when I want to seem smart, and it ain't for y'all. I don't care about trying to seem smart for my radio listeners, but, you know, I sometimes get to go speak at these colleges. They call me out. You know, last year I was called out to speak to these teachers at this African Center Charter School, had a retreat at the end of the school year. And they called me to give them some inspirational words. And I basically said, you know, encourage your children, instill hatred in your children's heart, and encourage them to rebel against all evidence of power. Anyway. It's a great message. So if you ever want me out, you know, I do family. I do bar mitzvahs. If you ever want some pan-African analysis, holla at your boy. Where was I? Because I told myself that I'm going to start with the topic. So y'all ready to talk about why white privilege is a myth? Because I've been going back and forth with black folks. And let me tell you what made me want to talk about this. Speaking of academic conferences. I was at the conference and my wife dragged me. Literally. This ain't even hyperbole. My wife literally dragged me to this academic conference. I'm sleeping in the hotel room and she's like, you got to go see this presentation. And I'm like, no, you know, conferences are like, you know, they show you can go to various sessions and the poster presentations and all that. And some grad student. But it was basically black grad students in psychology conference. And it was very well organized, I might say. Not enough vegan options. Maybe Wednesday I'll wear my shirt that I got there. They had this nice little logo shirt where there's this these black people holding up these young black men and this black woman and holding her up and lifting black people up to a ledge. So, you know, you kind of see that the black psychologists feel that they are obligated to uplift the race. And at least that's what their logo says. That's not what their research is doing, but that's what their logo says. Uplift black people. And it's got black people on the bottom uplifting other black people. So it ain't crabs in a barrel, or at least it's organized crabs in a barrel, coordinated crabs in a barrel. We still in the barrel, but we're coordinating our activities to get out as opposed to scrambling. So she dragged me out to this thing. And I don't want to, because like I said, these are my wife's colleagues. And she has to do grants and research and evaluations with these people. So I don't want to start no trouble. I don't want to chart no trouble with her in her professional life, but she dragged me to this. But anyway, one of the things I want to say, I won't talk about specifics. I'll speak broadly. But there was a session where they were basically talking about black psychology as it relates to child rearing for black children, how black parents basically cope with their children when their children are exposed to racism. But they don't like saying racism, so they say things like microaggressions, and macroaggressions, and they have all these fancy words for white folks being assholes to black people. And then not only white people have being asses to us, having the power to be asses to us and us lacking the power to respond accordingly. But anyway, as the moderator was there, that I sat through the thing with my mouth hanging open because of the things I was hearing. And maybe these are big brain folks. Maybe they know better than me. Maybe they see some things I refuse or I am not capable of seeing. But beyond all that, there's one thing that was said that stands out that I've thought about every single day. The moderator was up there and the Q&A got a little heated. These are all scholars. These are all scholars and researchers, PhDs or PhD, you know, postgrads. So just brain power. Enough brain power to, you know, I don't know what that brain power do. It's obviously not a threat to white power. So what else is the use of black brain power? Enough brain power, black brain power to get good jobs and consume whatever the white man manufactures and willing to sell us. But it's not enough brain power to overthrow the systems and institutions of global white domination into any ecocide, because that's the only value I have for black brain power. I don't have no other use for black brain power, but I digress. The moderator, it gets a little heated. And these are people from all over the country. Like I said, Florida, New York, some in Michigan, Chicago. Who cares? We were there repping Chicago, the West Coast, Midwest, and a lot of little small college towns. Hundreds of these black PhDs, little Arkansas, the Kentuckys, and all these places. And so, you know, they've got different environments and they've come to different conclusions. And they're there, healthy debate, healthy discourse. Unlike y'all, how it's not like the internet. No emojis, no memes, no little GIFs, no threats, no pull up. Hey, pull up. None of that. It's just people basically, you know, throwing big words at each other. But it was still a discourse. It was a debate, not an argument or bickering. So anyway, the moderator was you could tell that she does this stuff all the time. She just travels the world, you know, doing these conferences and moderating these debates and panel discussions. But one thing she said, and I will quote her verbatim. One professor who was sitting out in the audience and one of the grad students on the stage were having a heated back and forth. So she stepped up and said, wait a minute. She put her hand up and says, and she had this little thermos, this really cute little thermos she held close to her. So you know how these academic women do, how they carry themselves, you know. So she had her little thermos. She put her hand up and said, I'm going to exercise moderator privilege. I didn't hear anything else she said after that. All I saw was white behind my eyes and steam started coming out my ears and I started feeling a little dizzy. I'm like, wait, I didn't hear that. And so then they start to go on and on and on again. And then the sister on stage said something very controversial that upset everybody in the audience. She said that black youth being exposed to white microaggression is not always a bad thing. It doesn't always have negative outcomes. And the audience lost their collective ish. They bugged. They flipped tables. You ever seen academic riot? An academic riot. Let me show you what an academic riot is like. They start to turn and mumble in each other's ears and they start taking aggressive notes. I'm like, oh, it's a scholarly academic riot in here. They started taking very aggressive notes. I even heard the pen scratching on the notepad. Scratch, scratch, scratch. Even looked over at my wife. She scratched, scratch, scratch. Really, my wife was like, whoop, do, you know, she liked that girl. And so the woman was like, one woman got up and asked a question. How dare you say black youth, when they're exposed to white microaggressions, then there's no negative impact on the black student. How did you drive at that conclusion? Show me your research. Show me your design study. Show me your survey questions. Give me evidence. How dare you? Where's your peer review? And then the next person got up and said, I'm going to piggyback off of what this other person said. How dare you say when black people, how dare you? Where would you say this? How do you know they're not damaged? Whoa, whoa, whoa. He said, okay, next question. I want to piggyback off of what the first lady said and the second lady. And it was like 8 or 9 piggybacks. And so the woman says again, she puts her finger up. I want to exercise some moderator privilege. And I turn to my wife who's sitting next to me, who dragged me to this mess. In the middle, I could have got hurt. I could have got a hand cramp. I could have got carpal tunnel. Academic riots are dangerous too. Because I even took some notes. I forgot my notepad because I didn't even want to go. Because if you see me out in public, you see Bro Diallo's always taking notes too. I ain't going to try to hate on these other people. But I had to use my phone to take notes. I had this little note-taking post-it app on my phone. So I'm there taking notes too. And I'm like, you got me in the middle of this academic riot. But I was like, just for a minute, stop rioting. You know, chill out, fall back, Dr. Mingo. I said, did she just say moderator privilege again? And she said, yeah, she did say moderator privilege. Because my wife had went the day before. I played hooky. I went to Whole Foods on the first day we got to Ann Arbor. I went to Whole Foods and bought a whole case of vegan donuts. And then I went to Starbucks and got me a soy latte. And I went back to the hotel room and I watched those murder shows. Deadly Women, Snapped, The First 48, Forensic Files. I don't have cable at my house. So when I'm in the hotel room, I don't even want to go. I don't care where I'm traveling to. I only travel to exotic places for the hotel cable, basic cable. I've never in my life, maybe one full year, out of all my years on the planet, I've had one full year where I lived in a house that had cable. All the rest of the years of my life, I've never lived in a domicile that I could call my own that had cable. But anyway, I said, what the hell is that? And so my wife turns to me and is like, well, that's some of the things they say. So now privilege has saturated everything. If you're a moderator at an academic conference, then you have moderator privilege. You could just say moderator. Allow me to moderate for a moment. Allow me to regulate. Allow me to officiate. But no, y'all just have gone privilege crazy. Now, I thought, okay, black male privilege. I'm like, okay, I got to beat down black male privilege. That's some bull. But now they say heterosexuals privilege, and it's not even enough that you're heterosexual. You have to be cisgendered heterosexual. So even if you a man pun, if you the manliest man, if you just love nothing but the poontang, that's not enough. If you out here dressed like Prince, if you got some eyeshadow on, if you don't have enough, but you got to be cisgender, gender conforming to the gender norm, or you have cisgendered heterosexual privilege. And then I was in a room full of people with academic privilege, multilingual privilege. I'm 6'3". I have height privilege. And so now y'all done lost y'all damn mind with this privilege talk. And I knew this was going to happen. Again, I always have to refer y'all to the archives. I knew y'all were going to pull this. I knew y'all was going to do this crap. I tried to stop it. And so now, anything you have, employed privilege. And see, that is the lunacy when you don't have a revolutionary radical analysis of reality, of conditions, of power dynamics. When you have this knee-jerk, superficial conclusions about how the society is structured. I knew once y'all started saying white privilege, white folks, and by the time you call white folks something and they embrace it, by the time you come up to white folks and say, you have white privilege, and she's like, well, I'm going to seize that point. You know you done messed up. White people, the white people in power, the racists are never going to agree with you and start repeating what you said if you're right. Even when you call them supremacists. Now they're talking about white nationalism. You got the president on TV, like, why is nationalism's a nice word and white is a nice word? We bring them together, all of a sudden it becomes a bad word. Why can't we be nationalist? So, you know, Dale Jones told us 90% of warfare is cultural. Only 10% of warfare actually involves military conflict, shooting the enemy soldiers as they shoot at your soldiers, bombing their cities. And so you can tell who's more likely to endure or even win the battle or warfare if you study their culture, more so if you study their military preparedness. If you look at the Viet Cong and you look at the United States military, you would obviously think, well, the Viet Cong are going to get their butts handed to them. But that wasn't the case. And if you go all the way back to ancient history, the year 2000, and Bush, Cheney, John Bolton, many of those people are back again trying to wage war, Mike Pompeo, y'all beloved Colin Powell. There's a Colin Powell High School in Madison, Illinois. We're about to have a Barack Obama High School here in not too far from me. Everything, I'm in the center. Q4 Studios is the place to be. Y'all need to come check us because every time I refer to something in Chicago, I'm like, not too far from me. Everything's close to the Q4 Studio, very centrally located. But not too far from me, they're going to have a Barack Hussein Obama School. So we naming schools after war criminals. But if you look at the United States military versus the Iraqi military versus the Afghani, non-existent Afghans didn't even have a military. They might have had some militia. They called them warlords and bandits. So how you get the most technologically advanced military in the history of human existence going up against some bandits in a backwards country that has the lowest rates of illiteracy, the lowest rates of industrial development, and all the other horrible, horrible stats. And you would think the United States is going to come to Afghanistan and just knock it over. But one thing you look at, the culture. Haiti right now, they're still trying to conquer Haiti. Haiti is not conquered. It is not broken. It is not bowed. You would think it was. It's because of the culture. The cohesion. Let me tell you something. If the United States gets invaded, it's over. It's a wrap for the United States because the United States doesn't have a culture. That's why I make sure it always has to go out and be the aggressor. The United States cannot withstand an attack on or an invasion. That's why the only attacks that happen in the United States is done by the United States. The number one terrorist in America are white nationalists. The only thing invading the United States soils are white corporations, because if the United States could not endure a truly foreign invasion from an alien culture, because the first thing everyone would start doing is attacking themselves. You know, United States is crumbling because of an influx of Honduran refugees fleeing a crisis that the United States is overseeing. And the United States is ready to tear itself apart because of that. Dale Jones said, once the enemy penetrates your culture, it's all Mickey Mouse. It's over. But anyway, let's get back to privilege. That poor word privilege. I want to establish a sanctuary for the word privilege. I want privilege to come to my sanctuary so I can give it a back rub, rub its feet, put some cucumber slices over its eyes, and give it a mint julep, and play some soothing music for the word privilege, because y'all done beat this word to death. Y'all done overused, abused, and misappropriated this word. It's crazy. And of course, if, like I said, anything white folks do, you're going to find black folks going to start to do it too. So if white folks got privilege, instead of overthrowing white privilege, instead of subverting white privilege, instead of shunning white privilege, what do? We look amongst ourselves and see which one of us get to share in some remnants, some offshoot, some byproduct of white privilege. Oh, she has a PhD. She has a certain level of privilege. Oh, he's a man. He has testicles. He has a certain level of privilege because the system favors edgy, the white supremacists. The white system favors the educated, and it's patriarchal. So educated black folks have privilege, and male black folks, born male, not trans, male, born male black folks got privilege. But then let's go to the LGBT. You have some LGBT who are educated and upper class and male, and then some female, lower class, uneducated LGBTQAI. So then there's privilege within privilege, even in my household. I'm a man. I have privilege. My wife has a PhD. I only have a master's. She has privilege over me. You know, who has the privilege? My son is young. He has youth privilege. This is a youth-oriented society. My son has youth privilege. Huh? You see how stupid that sounds if everybody got some form of privilege? Okay, let me find the most unprivileged person. Black, female, lesbian, disabled, high school dropout, south side of Chicago, Nazi ideology, lactose intolerant, vegan, atheist, whoever, somebody find that woman. That's the only person on the earth who has to fit all of those. Find that woman for me and bring her. I want to have her on the show as the one person who we cannot find one element of privilege anywhere in her life. Homeless, immigrant, undocumented immigrant. She has to fit us. Find this woman. I know she exists. But other than her, that one woman, everybody else got privilege. And what it does is it takes a stark reality. Because whatever you want to call white folks, they're in a position of power. And they're in a position to abuse power. They are a threat to the life-sustaining capacity of the planet Earth. So whatever you want to call them, it's real. It's a threat that needs to be addressed. It's nothing to joke about. Real talk. Whatever you want to call it. But when you take that real threat and you start to dilute it, it's like Nazis. If everything's a damn Nazi, nothing's a Nazi. First, you got real Nazis who want to exterminate 80% of the world's population, take people's land by force. So those are the Nazis, right? But then you got feminazis, and then you got vegan Nazis, and then, oh, my mom's a Nazi because she won't let me play Xbox till 3 in the morning. Oh, the cop, this cop pulling me over, this county sheriff, he's a Nazi. Wouldn't you like to be a Nazi too? If everything's a Nazi, nothing's a freaking Nazi. And it's a form of intellectual laziness, but it's also a method of massive mind control. Because if we just said, okay, there's this thing called white privilege, let's all rise up against it. And because the majority of the world isn't white, the white people still represent a global minority. And in many places, even within the borders of the U.S., they represent a regional minority, a neighborhood minority, an economic minority. You know, you can start to rally around that. But then when you got, you know, the 1%, remember the Occupy movement, 99% versus the 1%. But then amongst the 99%, we start arguing with ourselves, who got privilege, who don't got privilege. But let's penetrate this a little deeper before we start to run out of town. What do white people say? If you go up to the average white dude, if I walked out downstairs from here, there's a gym. And if I walked into that gym and I ran into some bros, some juice heads, you know, pumping some iron. And I said, hey, white dude, you got white privilege. The first thing an average white person, I don't know if y'all do this face to face with white folks. Some of y'all white folks only exist in a nether realm somewhere. Y'all don't really interact with white people because even when you're around white people, it's never the white people. I have a lot of white friends, but I don't like the white man. So y'all act like, you know, whatever white people y'all take personal aren't the white people. That's another way of, you know, rationalizing and intellectualizing this stuff, disembodying it. So I know people personally. I talk all day and night about white people, but they've never met the white person they're talking about. Every white person they meet is the exception. The white people you work with, the white people you sleep with, the white people you cool with, the white people you like to turn on the TV and watch perform for you, Seinfeld, whatever you watch, Daenerys of the Targaryens, you know, that lady that wrote Harry Potter. There's all these wonderful white people. So if you go up to the average white person, when you finally find the white person that's the problem, which white person is the problem? I guess Donald Trump now. Now, we finally found the white man we've all been talking about for all these years. It's Donald Trump. We didn't even know it was Trump because y'all was watching The Apprentice, wasn't y'all? Wasn't you? And watching him hang out on yachts with Hustle Simmons. But anyway, if you go up to the white person that you think is the white person and say, hey, you have white privilege. The first thing that white person is going to do is start to tell you about all their hardships in life. What are you talking about? I had to work my ass off. And they're going to tell you about all the things they went through. And then you're going to turn around and say, well, and then you're going to explain what white privilege is. It doesn't mean that you didn't have hardships. It just means that your race was not the source of your hardships. So even people with privilege can suffer. But let me tell you something about that struggle, hard time, trailer park white boy. He don't give a damn about all that you talking. That doesn't matter to him any more than his struggles matter to you or should matter. Their struggles should not matter to us. But I digress. So, you know, white people say they run around talking about white privilege. When we have poor white people, we have an opioid crisis and we have white people in jail. Even though the raw numbers is more white men, raw numbers in jail, not per capita. You know, you got to do statistics. But white men are like, yeah, I know. I got a cousin in jail, had to join the Aryan Nation to stop the blacks from beating up on him. And all that stuff. So white people, they got struggles. So how do we explain this blanket of white privilege in a world, in a country where white people are suffering, man? Suicide rates, mass shootings, and all these psychological effects. White people are all taking all these psychotropic drugs. The United States makes up less than 5% of the world population and consumes over half of the psychotropic drugs, the Paxil, Zoloft, Ritalin. White people are losing their minds. Even the patriotic white heroes that white folks love so much, the white veterans are killing themselves to the tune of, what, 24 every day? And I really resent y'all. Got me sitting here talking about white folks' problems. And I've even said white privilege means you get to go to Walmart and buy more toxic products than I can. That's pretty much how the average white. Now, you have the white elite. which, as white people told us a decade ago, 1%, you have the white 1% who exist in the stratosphere that don't live lives that are alien to the average black person, but also the lives that, you know, the Koch brothers live, the lives that the Walton family lives, the Bezos, the Gates, the lives they live is alien to the average white person. You're never going to be in the streets having, even when these white people get together in their Bilderberg conferences, their Bohemian Grove retreats, they set up perimeters. They fly on private jets that even use different air routes. Most of these hyper elite white folks don't interact with human beings. You're never going to run into that white person at a protest or a Walmart parking lot. So the white people that we do run into that enjoy this privilege, to the average white person, it sounds crazy. I've talked to white folks. I read white folks' blogs, and the racist white folks, the liberal white folks, the progressive. Now, liberal whites, they lie to black people because black people, y'all white folks, liberal white folks' currency. When you start to understand the not-for-profit industrial complex, when you find these white Democrats, these white grad students, these white people like, yeah, they talk about, yeah, we have to fight white privilege. Those white people are hustling you. They're lying. White liberals are our enemy. Now, if you want to find, now, if you go talk to white radicals, right, anarchists, if you go fight to like the white people that are in the Earth Liberation Front, Animal Liberation Front, many of the hardcore Antifa, anti-fascist, black bloc anarchists, when you talk to those white people, they're like, shut up. They just tell you to shut up. The average black person comes to the average truly white radical, they're going to be like, listen, get out of my way. I'm going to, because they're not trying to find solidarity with black people. They're trying to rip down the infrastructure of capitalism. You go to a radical, truly radical white person and say, racism, they're like, yeah, that's bad. Get out of my way. I got to go burn down this SUV plant. So the white people who are really the John Browns, the modern day John Browns, and they are out there. They're here. The Chelsea Manning. They don't really deal with those type of issues. They're like, yeah, that stuff's bad, but I'm on a mission. So the white liberals are the ones that come and kumbaya with us and play drums with us, because what the white radical understands is, like, because I'm white, I have certain level of maneuverability. I have certain access. And so I don't really need to suss out any of these issues. I need to attack. So you got deep green resistance. Sunsara Taylor, them type of cats, Derek Jensen, Eric West, them type of cats. They don't, you notice they don't show up for these debates. They're like, white privilege is terrible. Yeah, white privilege is terrible, but guess what? You know, I got to stop Exxon. I got to stop BP. I want to kill the Koch brothers. Like, whoa, really? Yes, give me a chance. So those are the white people that don't really take time to talk to us. They in the grind. Many of them are in prison. Yeah, there are many white political prisoners. Sean Swain is one of my favorite white political prisoners. I like to read his writings. Not even because I need white, because, I mean, there's enough black radicalism, but it's just, he's really funny. He's just so disrespectful of the white establishment. Talks about punching rich white people in the face and beating up the Pope and stuff. He's an anarchist. I don't think he's ever going to get out of jail, but, you know, he's kind of like the white Mumia. But I think he's even more dangerous than the Mumia because, again, only liberals and black people listen to Mumia. If you get somebody like Sean Swain, I think he would be very attractive to the alt-right. You know, a lot of these neo-Nazi white people, they don't even know you can be like a leftist white radical. You can do violence for the left. They think the left is like, what do they say, the snowflakes. So Sean Swain is like, no, you can be a leftist, violent leftist radical. Because, you know, they think if they come over to the left, they have to give up their guns and their pipe bombs. And Sean Swain's like, oh, no, bring the guns and the pipe bombs from the right. We need them in the left, too. But anyway, So it's a losing argument. It's a circular argument. We say white people have privilege. White people explain to us about how they suffer and the things they go through. And then we tell them, explain to them how just because they're suffering and going through those things, it doesn't diminish the fact that they do have privilege. And then they say, well, I'm suffering. And so it's just, you get into this circular argument. And that's only the black people who didn't get caught up, because before you can even get nowadays, before you can even get to white privilege, you got to deal with all the internal privileges. Now moderators have privilege. So we're going to rise up and march against the academic conference moderators. And hell, I have a slightly larger, I mean, I'm not, what's the guy? I could never read Steve Harvey, but I have a larger platform than some other people. A sister was just telling me that I was debating with this feminist, and she said, I have to be careful. Well, she says she's no longer a feminist. She now is a womanist. Hey, praise. I don't know who to praise. Praise her own rational mind. But this former feminist, current womanist, said, she and I were debating. And she said, well, you have to be careful how you talk to me and how you promote and how you share our exchanges, because your platform is larger than mine. So me sharing or copying and paste something you said onto my platform is might get a little bit of feedback. But if you take what I say or take it out of context or challenge me and you share it on your platform, I could get a larger backlash because you have a larger platform. Now, I'm like, that's the first time and only time I've ever heard that I have any kind of platform, let alone a large one. But I do understand I'm not thick-headed, and I learn a lot from people I disagree with. So, yes, do I have platform privilege? And then how do we say, okay, I have a certain level of platform privilege. Hell, I'm broadcasting from AM 1680 and all 8 people listening to me, the 12 people listening to me on Facebook Live and the 32 people on YouTube. And I don't know. I have to call John to find out how many people are listening through the AM Signal iTunes app. So that is, and I don't take that for granted. That's why when I come into this studio, I mean, some sisters just asked me the other day, can you share some links with me? And I couldn't share all the links, and I know it don't seem like it. I do a lot of prep for these shows. I do a lot of research. I do a lot of fact checking and review. Even before I go on the air, when I'm playing the music, I'm double checking stats and facts. Now, I never get time to get to all of it because I don't manage my time here on the air wisely. I overindulge myself. I even admit that. But it's a platform. Now, do I have platform privilege? And then how do we rank platform privilege? You see, it's so stupid. So what we have to do, because our scholars have taught us, that words have meaning, words have impact. So if we have a proper analysis of a phenomenon, but we use the inappropriate or improper nomenclature, title, or terminology, we can confuse ourselves. And one thing we did understand, it will start to cloud our confusion. And this calling white people's behavior. Now, in the 60s, we used to talk, the buzzword was the white power structure. In the 60s, the Black Panthers, the SDS, the Black Liberation Army, SNCC, they would refer to the systems of oppression as the white power structure. And it didn't personalize it. So you couldn't go up into an average white person and say, hey, you're part of the white power structure. And the white person could say, listen, I'm an unemployed truck driver. So it allowed you to put things in perspective and not personalize it. And you could go to black people. You could go to Ralph Bunche, who was one of the most prominent. He was the Obama of his era, Ralph Bunche. Look him up if you don't know this old Uncle Tom. Malcolm X used to talk about him all the time. You could go to Ralph Bunche and say, hey, Ralph, you're part of the white power structure. And you'll notice something. White people, the white liberals, the white conservatives, and the white masses never embraced that white power structure. They didn't like that term because it was very effective. And I keep telling y'all, I know y'all love those. I see y'all T-shirts. Y'all love Giancarlo standing on that podium with his fist in the air. Y'all love that image of Bobby Seale and Huey P. standing out front of the Panther headquarters with that 12-gauge. Y'all love those images of Stokely Carmichael, his name back then, who later became Kwame Ture, standing down saw, going head-to-head with them racists, them rednecks in overalls. Y'all love those images. I love those images. I have those images. Not only in my papers and on my t-shirts, I have those images seared into my brain. But one thing y'all don't understand is the level of intellectual work that went behind constructing all those beautiful images. The Black Panther Party was a research body. It was a research organization. When you joined the Black Panther Party, the first thing they did was give you a book list, not a pistol. And if you go back and actually not just listen to the speeches, but really listen to the dialogues that were going on again, they were engaged in philosophical and scholarly development and rebellion. Huey P. was a law student. Bobby Seale was an engineering student. Kwame Ture was a medical student. These weren't. You know, they were just as emotional. Y'all see them screaming, hooping and hollering and throwing fists and waving guns. Yes, they were as pissed off as the rest of us. But they had an academic, intellectual and scholarly foundation. And I know this seems contradictory because I'm just spent the first quarter of the show making fun of and talking down on this academic conference I went to. But there's nothing inherently good about scholarship or bad. It just is. Now you got revolutionary, radical, subversive scholarship, and then you have status quo, integrationist, scared scholarship. So anyway, they called it the white power structure, which was brilliant. I don't know why we gave that up, but we gave it up because white folks didn't give it rhythm. White folks didn't give it play. White folks didn't allow it to carry forward. Now white folks like the term white supremacy, even when white people are denouncing white supremacy. It's like telling a woman she's too sexy. She'll, oh, I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to be so damn sexy. Baby, you too sexy. There's sexiness, but then there's going overboard on the sexy. You know the complimentary insults? You see a woman down the street, damn, baby, don't hurt nobody with that thing. Oh, maybe that's not a compliment. Then maybe that's harassment. But y'all get my point. You know? It's like telling a man, wow, your penis is just too huge. Like, damn it. Oh, it's such a burden I carry. Having a penis that's too big. Monstrous. And I apologize for that. And I have to work on that. That's what white supremacy. That's how white people deal with supremacy. And black people come up. You're supreme. Oh, I'm so sorry. My bad. Being so supreme. Being the highest manifestation of humanity. And my brilliance and beauty and intellect. Oh, I'm so sorry. I will work on that, I promise. To be less better than you. Or help you to be as good as me. I'll do my darndest. So now, white supremacists, and when it came into play back, you know, Neelie Fuller and Francis Cress Welsing made that popular, white supremacy. And black people were in the hood like, white supremacy. Yeah, these white supremacists, global white supremacy. Supreme, supreme, supreme. Go look the word up. Go look up the damn definition. And so, all of a sudden, you turn on MSNBC, Fox News, and they're like, yes, the white supremacists. We didn't say it. That's your word for us. We didn't. The white supremacy. Supreme, white, together. Yes, well, we have to stop this, y'all. Stop being so sexy and stop having such big penises. We have to fight white supremacy. Even the white people who claim to want to fight white supremacy, that's a little ego boost. That increases their serotonin levels. You know, if there was a giant penis protest and they put my name on one of the protest banners, oh, these men with giant penises, and I'd put, oh, my goodness, they're protesting me. Oh. I have to try to do better. I have to work on this reform. But in a way, you know, somewhere in the back of my mind, yeah. That's how white people take it. But they didn't like white power structure. It was a sterile term. It was a direct term. It was a term that every day is confirmed by the evidence. the reality. It's because they went down south and they said, we can't just run around talking about the honky, the white man. So let's start talking about and railing against the white power structure. Say we're organizing against the white power structure. The white power structure is illegitimate. The white power structure is corrupt. So white folks are like, let's call it white supremacy. Yeah, white folks. And so you think you're being slick, but you're not. It's the same thing with white privilege. They adopt it. They embrace it. By the time white folks start repeating your word for them. So I said, several shows ago, and let me tell you something else about privilege. Another thing that white people don't even understand, because white people, you are not privileged. And what did I say? If you're a Bro Diallo show, you know what I'm about to say next. I say that we shouldn't call it white privilege. We should call it white pathology. To allow a cop to kill an unarmed child, and because that cop is serving the systems and institutions of not white supremacy, it's white domination. Okay, let me just give you the correct terms. White supremacist should be called a white aggressor. White supremacist should be called white aggressor. You should never say supremacy again in relationship to what white people are doing. Because their system and their behavior is parasitic. And parasites, we don't consider leeches to be superior life forms to the creatures that they feed upon. You ever see those lampreys and you see a beautiful, majestic shark swimming through the ocean? And then when you look at its underbelly, there's these little suckers all over its belly feeding off of it. And no, the lampreys don't have to do the work. The shark does all the work. It has to hunt down the leatherback turtle and hunt down the seal and fight and do all the work. And the lamprey just latches on. And we don't call the lampreys fish supremacists, even though they get all the good stuff and do none of the work. We call them parasites. So we can start saying white parasitism, white aggression, white domination. There's several words, but the ultimate word I think we need to replace, and you've heard me say it before, and I hate that I have to say it again, white privilege, call it white pathology. And then that applies to even when you say black people, because when you say black male privilege, it's black male pathology. We got a lot of black people in the black community who are not exercising white privilege. They are spreading and fully engulfed in white pathology. So if I'm a black man looking to prey upon people in my community, looking to exploit my own community for profit, looking to take the resources of my community and go spend it on frivolous stuff like nice cars, money, clothes, and hoes, then I am not exercising privilege. I am in the throes of a pathology, a pathological mind state, a pathological mentality, a pathological culture, pathological relationships to my larger community. Because when you say black men have black male privilege, the brother's going to say the same thing white people say. We get incarcerated. We get shot by cops. Black women have a longer life expectancy than us. Black women have higher graduation rates than black men do. How can you say we're privileged? And the black women are like, you are killing us. You're raping us. That's not a privilege. That is a pathological behavior. And when you have a pathology, usually there is some type of vector that spreads the pathology. There is some type of core diagnosis source, whether it is a tumor, whether it is a nuclear exposure to environmental contaminants, radioactive contaminants. And then you can start when you take a diagnostic point of view, because privilege is, at some point, it becomes a point of opinion. So when we redefine privilege as pathology, it starts to all make sense. It starts to all make sense, and everyone will have to line up. You can't deny the pathology. You can deny the privilege. Is the society six? Yes, the society. Even the most patriotic, red-blooded white American will say, yeah, you look at the polls. You ain't got to listen to the Bro Diallo scene. You go to the Pew Research website. You go to the CDC. Any type of research body, the legitimate, accepted, corporate, or governmental research body will say, white people in America are discontent. They think the country's going in the wrong direction. Now, those white people might say it's because of the Mexicans. It's because we're $1 trillion in debt because the white government's giving all the welfare to black women. And that's why we're in debt. Or it's the Jews, the Zionist occupy. They might have really stupid reasons for believing that the country's in the wrong direction, but they believe it. So there is a rot. There is a pathology. There is a disruption that all of us feel. But calling it white privilege is what they call a misnomer. It's a misdiagnosis, and it's an absurdist labeling, and it's an absurdist rationale that just starts us all to start attacking each other and pecking at each other. And I'd much rather sit in a room full of black people and determine which one of us are displaying elements of Western, white, mainstream status quo pathology, because that's much more obvious than talk about which one of us has privilege versus doesn't. And what happens with privilege is other people are going to say, give me some of that privilege. If you say this person has privilege, then what you're going to want to do is try to obtain that privilege, share in that privilege, get your piece of that privilege. But if you say this person has pathology, nobody wants a piece of that. So this whole concept of white privilege feeds into black integrationism. We want to integrate and be equal and share in what they got. Whereas we understand it and define it as pathology. Nobody wants no part of that. So it will better orient you to oppose it as opposed to try to gain a piece of it. Why is this so hard? Why is no one listening to me? That woman would have never stood up in that academic conference and said, I'm going to exercise moderator pathology. Allow me a moment of moderator pathology. And if she thought that she, because as being a moderator was a, the way she moderates was pathological, she would be, if she was sane, in which she did appear to be sane, she would be motivated to try to fix it as opposed to just saying, hey, it is what it is. Let's just get through it. And we are more educated now than we've ever been in this country. And we're making more stupid, simple, base level mistakes than we've ever made. And also, let me tell you something else. Ain't no such thing as white privilege, because white people don't give a damn about white people. White people don't help white people. They don't care about each other. And so when we come to white people and we say, well, white folks, y'all all stick together and to do us wrong. And every white person you say this to in their own family, they could think of a dozen white folks that then did them wrong in their own family. So this concept of white unity, white people don't understand it. It's a myth. Again, it's another one of our myths. White privilege is a myth. White unity is a myth. Now, I got books, and I purposely brought two books written by black folks and two books written by white folks. And I have dozens of these books. One book is 500 Years of European Behavior. Its effect and its effect on African people, but the 500 years of European behavior. And on the cover, there is a intercontinental ballistic missile. There is, for some reason, champagne, a M1 machine gun, and a crucified Christ on the cover of the book. Right? This isn't the best book, but it's very accessible. It's very easy to digest, and it takes some rather complex issues and simplifies them, historical issues. And that's Nana Equal by Wiku. 500 years. And then we have the classic, the Bible. It's got more pages than the Bible, but this is like more heavy. This is more academic, written by Dr. Marimbani, another psychologist. Yorugu, an African-centered critique of European cultural thought and behavior. Another classic. Now, these are written by two black people. And white people don't listen to black folks. And white people need to understand this. I always tell good white people, you're not a good white person if you're trying to help black people. Because white people are currently under threat. The greatest threat to white people is the white elite. So you can help blacks if you're really a good white person by saving yourself. So white people, there are some white people, if they understood that there's that this system is an existential threat. And yes, as a white person, you can drive the streets without being pulled over. And even if you pull over and you got a meth in one, a fist of meth in one hand and a machine gun in the other hand, you're less likely to get killed than a black child with a lollipop on a tricycle. And it, that's pathological. It's not privilege. But hey, if that's what if and they said during the civil rights era, black people in the South said white people, the average white person in the South, was as uneducated and as poorly housed as the average black person in the South. Dirt floors and outhouses, no indoor plumbing and not even any electricity. But one thing they did have was those segregated toilets and water fountains. And white people were willing to not only kill us, but to die to preserve their special water fountains and toilet, even though they derived no other special benefits from this sick, wicked system. That's their malfunction. So anyway, that's what we understood about them. And it's not really our responsibility to educate them, but the more of them that can be educated, it will reduce our burden. So anyway, Derek Jensen, this is volume one. This is a two-volume book. But this is the analysis of the problem. The second volume of this book is the solution to the problem. But it's called Endgame, The Problem of Civilization. And whenever he says civilization in this book, read white civilization or Western civilization. All right. And so it's a volume one of Derek Jensen. And then of course, the classic. You see my, if you were watching online, you see my book. My son, he scribbled in this book when he was a baby. He's 16 now. I'll never forgive him. But you see, this book is tattered. I have to go to this book to help me maintain my own sanity. Of course, this is a Canadian archaeologist, so I don't know. He's not an American, but he's still a white man. I don't know what white Americans are, the ultimate white folks at, for now. The British used to be the ultimate whites. And before the British, it was the French. And before the French, it was the Spanish and Portuguese. So the ultimate white title, it passes around. It seems like the Chinese are in competition to become the ultimate white. Oh, I got a caller. Let me take this call. You're live on Q4 Radio, Bro Diallo Show. State your name or alias and where you're calling from. Hello? Hello? Hung up on me. See, that's why I'm be opening the phone. See how y'all play? Anyway, we got Iceman's Inheritance. The prehistoric sources of Western man's racism, sexism, and aggression. Right? So there are three books that can kind of help you understand that we are not dealing with a people who have simply reserved certain special privileges for themselves. We are not dealing with a culture that that simply favors some people over other people. We are dealing with a mentality and a fundamental, what Marimba Ani and Yorugu calls an Isili, that is threatening the very ability, the existence of life. Donald Trump, no doubt that he would want his son to have special advantages over the rest of us, all of his ugly inbred looking children. But Barron Trump, Donald Trump is conducting himself and governing in such a way that is threatening the very ability for Barron Trump to live. These elites are destroying the life-sustaining capacity of the earth. They're not even making a way for other white people. They're not even making a way of preserving enough of the world's ecosystems and biological and ecological infrastructures for another generation. That's not privilege. That's pathology. That you're killing everything. Barron Trump, yes, he might have more money or you didn't even got to be Barron. Shasha. And what's the Malia Obama? Because Obama is engaged in white pathology. He doesn't have white privilege, but he has a very deep white pathology. Imperialism, capitalism, the mythological meritocracy of the liberal Democrats. He has a lot of pathological mentalities and behaviors that come straight out of Europe. He is not acting as an African. Even though he is an African, he's not behaving like a black person. He's not representing or advancing black interests or culture. So you ain't got to be white to be infected with white pathology. Just like you ain't got to be a dog to catch rabies. Even though we generally associate it with dogs. So we have to understand and start using the appropriate terms. Now, if you we start to say in the black community, white, every time you hear white privilege, say, whoa, white pathology. You're not going to hear that on MSNBC or CNN, just like the term white power structure didn't catch on. And it's so important. And I know y'all think, like, what difference does it make if I say it's white privilege or white pathology? If you've been to a black gathering of progressive, liberal, even radical or black nationalists or Pan-African black folks, and you go in a room where we're trying to work out our problems one amongst the other, you'll see what the problem is saying the inappropriate or inaccurate word. If you go to the hospital and say I'm sick and they diagnose you with cancer when you only have a hernia and you start getting treatment for cancer when you should have had a treatment for hernia, no matter how good the treatment is, it's only going to make you sicker. So you need proper diagnosis. And in order to have a proper diagnosis, you need proper terminology in order to effectuate a proper treatment. So we are not fighting against privilege. White people are not enjoying or practicing or engaged in privilege. And if you really don't believe me about white privilege, go study European society when there were no black people around. Before they got, go look at Europe or any place you define as white before they got access to Africa, Asia, the Middle East, the New World resources. Look at white people amongst white people, how they behaved amongst each other. And we like to hear a lot of things that white people say. They talk about, oh, overpopulation. They were talking about overpopulation, Plato. They were talking about overpopulation when there was only a fraction of the number of people on the earth. They were trying to kill each other. You want to talk about lynching? Tell me the difference between the witch trials and how they would hunt down these witches based on a false accusation. A man or a woman will go to bed at night and say, I had a dream. And the old herbalist, the old witch lady came into and came into my home and smothered my baby. And so a white woman makes a false accusation against another poor white woman or an old, useless white woman, because if you're old, too old to have babies, what use are you? Because their God told them that white women are nothing but living, walking incubators. And so a white woman would make a false accusation, and a mob of white people would get together and go drag this old white lady out of her house. They'd stick all types of foreign instruments into her body orifices. They'll parade her through the street, humiliate her. They'll hang her. They will burn her alive. And they will take parts of her body's home as trophy. A white woman. Now tell me how that's different than a lynching. I say this all the time. I've asked this from everybody from around the way, homies in the hood. And I've even asked this question of Harvard-trained historians. PhD historians from Harvard. I said, give me one behavior, one treatment that black people have endured from whites that white people had not or don't currently impose on themselves. Tell me something they do to us that they didn't do to each other. Europe was a laboratory of exploitation and human misery. It was a laboratory. And once they perfected it, they spread it across the world. And now guess what? The so-called third world is now a laboratory for human repression. So everything we comfortably sit here and allow them to do in the Congo, allow them to do in Honduras, allow them to do in Palestine, allow them to do in Burundi, allow them to do in New Zealand, in Tasmania, everything that we allow these white governments, first world white governments, to do overseas, they're going to bring right here to the hood, and they're going to even take it to the white suburbs. That ain't privilege. That's pathological. And this isn't even funny anymore. If we don't stop our scholars, our activists, the people who are supposed to lead us from talking this nonsense about white privilege, we need to change the language. That's how the human mind works. They've hooked us up to biometric machines that measure our brain waves and our hormonal uptake and our hormonal outputs. And we find that when people hear words, words influence thoughts, and thoughts guide behaviors. So if you tell someone you're privileged, you're privileged, you're supreme, you're privileged, you're privileged, you're supreme, you're supreme, you're privileged, you're privileged, you're supreme, you're supreme. If you tell a people that, they eventually are going to accept it, even if they write in your face or reject it. No, I'm not. No, I'm not. No, I'm not. No, I'm not. Yes, you are. Yes, you are. Yes, you are. Yes, you are. We got to stop using those terms. We got to tell them you're pathological. Donald Trump is pathological. He's not privileged. I mean, would you want his life? He seems miserable. Now that we know about his history since he ran for president, the dude ain't never had sex he didn't have to pay for. If he wasn't a billionaire, he'd be an incel in a basement somewhere. If his father wasn't a billionaire, I'm sorry. If his father wasn't rich because he didn't make his own money. He has to pay Melania for sex and contract. He had to pay Ivanka and all his other wife, mail order bride. He's out raw dogging porn stars for pay. You call that privilege? You think Donald Trump has privilege? You think that's something to aspire? You want to integrate with Trump? You want to integrate with Trump's lifestyle? You want the same opportunities, outcomes as Trump? Or many other pathological rich white men? We got to use proper terms, y'all. They're not privileged. And what they do, and because they are rich, they're wealthy. Let's not confuse that. They got a whole ton of money. All these white nations that don't even have any natural resources. The top 10 wealthiest nations in the world don't even have a fraction of the natural resources of the top poorest, the bottom poorest nations. I'm not denying they got cake. But then we got other myths. Oh, they work hard. They're unified. Oh, we don't stick together. That's why we ain't got nothing. Unity has no direct correlation to money. In fact, there's only one thing that will guarantee your success in this world. Here it is right here. It ain't education. It ain't hard work. It ain't grinding and hustling. It's not asking the universe. Dr. Bradley says, not intelligence, nor morality, nor quote unquote spirit, but aggression is responsible for the white man's quote unquote superiority. He wrote this book in the 70s and he knew that it wasn't true superiority. He put superiority in quotation marks. Aggression is responsible for the expansion of Caucasoids, both geographically and culturally, at the expense of other races. We witnessed the final act of expansion in our own time. It began when the glaciers retreated. When the worm is the worm ice age, W-U-R-M. The worm released the white race from its tutelage under fire and ice. When pathological temporal aggression was unleashed on the world. The higher levels of aggression, which is merely an incidental result of glacial evolution, has fueled extreme manifestations of temporal assertion and defense amongst Caucasoids. Rampant technology, environmental pollution, resource rape, and the threat of nuclear war are the results. So that's all it is. You have to be pathological to succeed. If Jay-Z would not be a billionaire if he was a true humanitarian. And I know some of us, because we're pathological, like, oh, you just pro-poverty. And people keep telling me I love poverty. I hate poverty. I wouldn't be a socialist if I loved poverty. If I was a... You know who loves poverty? Rich people. Because guess what? Guess what every rich person needs? A whole bunch of poor people, or people who are willing to live in poverty in order for them to be rich. There are only so many resources to go around. There's only so many mansions. And then there's this really wonderful story coming out of Brazil with the former president of Brazil. They said under the socialist regime, the wealthy white Brazilians were prospering. They were making more money. But you'll find out that when they had the trust busters, I mean, and I have to go into this too, socialism in America. Do you believe America's capitalist? America is not a capitalist. But anyway, they found that the wealthy white people of Brazil were doing well under socialism. But the problem was the poor people were doing well too. And so the wealthy white people would be able to go to the airport, and now they see blacks and natives or Tainos or Mestiços, and they're seeing people. So it wasn't that it's not enough just for them to do well economically. They have to be pathological. They have to be supreme socially and culturally. They have to be, you know, me living in a mansion isn't as enjoyable if I can't know that there are people sleeping in the sewer. Me having this wonderful feast tastes a little bit more flavorful if I know people are out there starving. Their pleasure is a byproduct of other people's pain, and they need to know that other people are living in pain in shithole countries in order for them to enjoy their first world status. It's a pathological mindset. That is not privilege. And like I said, and if you think that white people have some special covenant or some special loyalty, if you're a white person who thinks this, go study white history. If we all became white tomorrow, if the ADOS movement was successful and everyone became white tomorrow, there'd be even more warfare. I mean, these people fought two world wars and it wasn't nothing but white folks fighting a world war. But we still think there's this thing called white unity. And now they're gearing up for a third world war. And Iranians are the white folks' cousins. And the Russians already told Iran, you know, if America wants to be froggy, we going to jump with you. So we're on the verge of a third world war. That is all. Ain't no African nations got nothing to do with it. Ain't no Latin American Caribbean nations. The majority of the Asian nation, exclusion of China and maybe North Korea, are like, we don't want no parts of this mess. Let us farm our rice, herd our goats, tend our cattle and chickens and live. What the hell is wrong with you people? You got all the money. And you're still not content. You come to my house. You enslave my son. You rape my daughter. You murder my wife. And you take everything from my house. You set my house on fire. And I live in the rubble of my home. And you take everything you took. You go and build yourself a mansion. But you still come back to my rubble pile and throw rocks at it. There's not even anything left for you to take. And you're still, you know. You burn my home to ashes, then you have to piss in the ashes, and then you have to defecate in the ashes. What the hell is that? Iceman, Yerugal, we have to understand this. We have to grasp this. This is not privilege. Privilege and supremacy are too beautiful of words, and it's their language. Even if we got to go back to using, you know, like the Pacific Islanders, they call it the Howley. They call them Howley, the empty people, the ghost. And I'm not saying this just because I want to be right. I'm saying this because this will impact our behavior. Black children grow up hearing about white privilege and they're like, I like privilege. You know, I got an Xbox in my room. That's what privilege is. My older son has a TV and an Xbox in his room. My younger son doesn't. Because my older son has proven have a level of maturity where he can, you know, regulate himself. My younger son, he hasn't. So my older son has privileges. My older son is about to fly to, I don't know where he's France. He's about to fly overseas, take his passport and fly across the globe. My younger son can't do that. So my older son has privileges that my younger son doesn't have. But if my older son was torturing, murdering, and stealing from my younger son, I wouldn't say he has privilege. I say he's pathological. He needs to be removed from my son, if not from my family altogether. See how that works? So I'm not about to debate those privileges. I'm going to target the pathology. And the privileges fall where they're made. Every society has had privileged or elite people. But not every society was ecocidal and genocidal and imperialist. And now we got black folks out here fighting for privileges or fighting to take privileges and adopt privileges. White privilege is a myth. White people are under a existential threat. White people, when they talk about white genocide, there is a white genocide going on. It's called omnicide because the white corporations that most of these white people support are destroying the life-sustaining capacity of the earth. So the melting of the polar ice caps, that's white genocide. But that's white everything side. That's omnicide. So to the extent that everything is under threat, yeah, they're under threat too. But they're too blind. It ain't no damn Hondurans coming across the southern border. It's not legal, lawful access to abortion. But they're dumb as hell, and we're striving to get their education. We're striving to it, and we celebrate when we enroll in their school, no matter how much stupidity and lunacy they display to us. Anyway, Q4 Radio, Bro Diallo Show, AM 1680. Let's change the lexicon. We say white aggression, white domination, white pathology, white power structure. No more supremacy, no more privilege. And I don't mean ended in the world. I mean, we don't use those terms to refer to the most wretched system ever conceived of and imposed by any human species. Q4 Radio, AM 1680, iTunes app, iTunes Radio. You can find Bro Diallo. Go to DialloKenyatta.com for archived shows. You can also become a Patreon and get the full access to the Bro Diallo archives, plus other rewards and appreciation gifts for as little as $1 a month. I really need and truly appreciate any support you can give me for the efforts I display here and the work I do here. And maybe we can even expand to a 5-day-a-week show so I can get, because I did want to talk about Hong Kong, China, and British colonialism. I wanted to talk about the Straits of Hormuz and the emerging Iran conflict. There's so much I got to get to, but I do what I can do when I'm able to do it. Q4, and I appreciate you listening. I appreciate you supporting. I appreciate everyone engaging, and I will see you guys Wednesday morning, Q4 Radio. Bro Diallo Show.